picture this. It's 4 p.m. on a Friday. You are staring at your screen, and the integration has just, it's completely failed.
Oh, yeah, the classic Friday afternoon nightmare.
Right. But, you know, here's the real kicker. Nobody actually wrote a line of bad code.
Really? None at all.
None. What happened was your product team, they went and used Jira's AI to generate a user story and like a rough component spec.
Okay, sounds normal so far.
Yeah, but at the exact same time, Design used Figma's AI to turn a wireframe directly into React code.
Oh, I see where this is going.
And meanwhile, engineering, they fed that exact same wireframe and ticket into a coding agent to, you know, get a head start.
So everyone is just running at top speed in parallel.
Exactly. And every single one of these tools produced something that looked totally plausible. I mean, it looked like real working code.
But I'm guessing none of them actually match.
Not even close. They're completely different implementations. And like, nobody even noticed until all the work collided right at the end of the week.
Yeah, and that is not just bad luck.
Right, it's a symptom. It shows how AI hasn't just, you know, sped up coding. It has completely broken our traditional handoffs.
It really has.
So that's our mission for today's deep dive. We're looking at this brand new, honestly incredibly insightful article from April 2026. It's by a VP of engineering, Vinny Carpenter, and it's called the Agentic SDLC, Uniting the AI Tool Sprawl.
It's a great piece.
It really is. We want to shortcut your understanding of, you know, why adding more AI to your workflow is currently just causing absolute chaos and how you can actually regain control.
Yeah, because the structural flaws in how we build software, they've always been there. We just couldn't see them as clearly.
Because everything used to be so slow, right?
Exactly. Carpenter makes this really compelling argument that AI did not create the broken handoffs between product design and engineering.
It just exposed them.
Right, it merely exposed them. Historically, you know, the software pipeline slowed down at the implementation phase simply because writing code took a massive amount of manual effort.
Yeah, you had to literally type it all out.
Right. It acted as this natural brake on the entire system. But now, a skilled engineer with modern tools can produce in hours what used to take like weeks.
So that break is just completely gone.
Completely gone.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit. It's kind of like, imagine construction crew, right? Where the plumber, the electrician, and the framer were all just handed these futuristic power tools that work at the speed of light.
Oh, I like this analogy.
Thanks. So the walls are going up in literal seconds, but there are, you know, water pipes running straight through the electrical boxes.
Because nobody bothered to check if they were all looking at the exact same blueprint.
Yes, exactly. The speed itself is the thing that's causing the destruction.
That's a great way to put it. The bottleneck has inverted entirely upstream.
Upstream, like away from the coding part.
Yeah. We are no longer constrained by the mechanics of writing software. We're constrained by our ability to define and communicate what to actually build. In a traditional software development lifecycle, you know, an SDLC, those handoffs between teams were always messy. They were full of vague assumptions.
Right, the classic unsaid requirements.
Exactly. But because humans type slowly, developers had the time to pause. They could look at a vague ticket, walk over to a product manager's desk, and just say, "Hey, what do you actually mean here?"
They could clarify the intent, but
Yeah.
AI models, they don't exactly take coffee breaks to ask the PM what they really meant by, you know, make the user dashboard pop.
No, they don't. An AI model does not demand organizational maturity.
Wow.
It simply ingests whatever fuzzy specification you give it, and it builds rapidly in the totally wrong direction.
So if the specs are fuzzy, it doesn't pause, it just goes.
Right. And that is the fundamental difference between an automated SDLC and what Carpenter calls an agentic SDLC.
Right, what's the difference there?
Well, an automated pipeline just runs unit tests, right? Or it deploys code without human intervention. But an agentic pipeline has AI actively making implementation decisions based on the specs.
Oh, I see. So the spec is ambiguous. The old cost used to be like a delay in the schedule.
Exactly, and today it shows up as high-speed rework.
Okay, but here's where it gets really interesting. If the problem is upstream clarity, why is the generated code actively colliding with itself? Like in our Friday scenario.
Well, Carpenter points out that every vendor is racing to own the whole life cycle.
Yeah, Jira doesn't just want to be a ticketing system anymore, right? It wants to write the code.
And Figma doesn't just want to be a design surface. It wants to dictate the state management of your React app.
So they are actively stepping on each other's toes. Turf wars.
Huge turf wars. The vendors are heavily incentivized to expand their turf, you know, to justify their massive enterprise licensing price.
Really?
But this creates a really dangerous dynamic for the teams actually using them. It's this combination of narrow context with extremely high confidence.
Okay, narrow context, high confidence. What does that look like?
Well, think about a Figma AI. It operates with immense confidence within its very narrow window of understanding. It might generate a beautiful functional React component.
Which looks great on the surface.
Right. But it knows absolutely nothing about your company's back-end compliance boundaries or your specific database architecture.
This raises an important question, though. Like, wait, if an AI is sophisticated enough to generate complex, production-ready React code,
yeah,
why can't we just give it access to our entire code base?
Oh, just point it at the repo.
Yeah. Why can't we just point the coding agent at our GitHub and say, read everything, learn the back-end compliance boundaries yourself, and, you know, don't make mistakes. Why do we have to manually fence it in?
I mean, it's a fair question, but it comes down to how large language models mechanically process information and the hard limits of context window.
Even with the massive context windows we have now.
Even then, throwing millions of lines of code and 10 years of architectural decisions at an AI, it just introduces an enormous amount of noise. LLMs operate on statistical probability, not deep systemic comprehension. They don't inherently understand why a particular compliance boundary exists.
They just know that it appears in the training data somewhere.
Right. So when an agent is forced to hold an entire enterprise architecture in its working memory, its ability to focus on the specific intent of a single new feature severely degrades.
So it starts hallucinating.
It hallucinates connections that aren't there.
Wait, so if these tools are just confidently guessing outside their lanes, aren't teams just generating what Carpenter calls plausible-looking garbage at scale?
Yes, exactly. Plausible-looking garbage.
Like the code compiles, it looks stylistically correct, but it completely misunderstands the database schema. Isn't this just masking massive institutional debt behind really great quarterly velocity metrics?
You hit the nail on the head. Shipping fast right now means a massive maintenance bill is going to arrive later.
Yikes.
And the real danger is that this bill usually arrives long after the original AI prompt is gone.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, the human who wrote the prompt has moved on to another project. The chat session has evaporated.
And you end up with a code base full of generated logic that nobody fully understands.
And no one remembers asking for. You completely lose the why behind the code.
So your velocity chart looks amazing to the executives, but your actual product is built on a foundation of sand.
Exactly.
So since we clearly cannot trust the tools to stay in their lanes autonomously, organizations basically have to step up and redraw the lanes themselves.
They do. And this is where Carpenter introduces his new mental model to solve this. He calls it the intent stack.
The intent stack. Okay, break that down for us.
The core argument is that we have to stop organizing our workflows around specific tools.
Like stop having a Jira lane or a Figma lane.
Right. Stop organizing around tools and start organizing them around layers of intent. He defines the 6-layer framework.
Okay, what are the layers?
It starts at vision and strategy. Then it moves down to requirements, then design, then implementation, validation, and finally feedback.
Why slice it into those specific 6 layers, though? Why not just organize it by the traditional teams? You know, product design, engineering.
Because organizing by team creates the exact siloed friction we saw in your Friday afternoon nightmare scenario.
Because everyone stays in their own little bubble.
Exactly. Intent is not bound by a department. When you move from vision to requirements, the scope of intent narrows.
Right.
And when you move from requirements to design, it narrows even further into user interaction. Product and engineering might co-own the requirements layer.
Oh, I see. And then design and engineering might co-own the design layer?
You got it. By forcing the organization to focus on the layer of intent rather than the department, you clarify exactly what decision is being made.
And who is actually accountable for it, regardless of which tool they happen to be typing into at the time.
Exactly.
So that 4 p.m. Friday disaster happened because the transition between those layers was just a total mess. Jira, Figma, and the coding agents were all operating on completely different interpretations of the intent.
Yes.
So how does the intent stack actually enforce a clean handoff? Like, practically?
Through an artifact that Carpenter calls the context spine.
The context spine?
Yeah.
Sounds serious.
It is the critical mechanism that moves between the layers of the intent stack. But, and this is key, it is not a bloated 50-page mega document that nobody reads.
Thank goodness, because nobody reads those.
Nobody. It's a lightweight, living specification, and it contains exactly 5 fields.
Okay, what are the 5?
The problem statement, the acceptance criteria, explicit constraints, interfaces, and non-goals.
Oh, I love that. The inclusion of non-goals is just brilliant.
It's so necessary.
I mean, think of non-goals like putting a fence around an eager golden retriever, right?
Great image.
Yeah, you want the dog to fetch the tennis ball, but you explicitly need to tell it not to dig up the neighbor's prize-winning petunias while doing it.
Right.
And an AI agent is exactly like that golden retriever. It wants to solve the problem so badly that it will completely over-engineer a solution. It'll refactor your entire routing system and add 3 new libraries.
Unless you explicitly put a fence around it and say, do not touch the routing system.
Yes.
The non-goals are the structural fence.
Makes total sense.
But what makes the context spine function mechanically within an AI-driven system is its format.
Look.
Carpenter highlights this technique, which he actually credits to a colleague, Dan Greller, of using YAML front matter at the very top of the context spine document.
Wait, YAML? Like the configuration language?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, to someone who isn't writing config files all day, how does a chunk of YAML code at the top of a document actually stop an AI from hallucinating?
What's fascinating here is that AI models are fundamentally non-deterministic, right?
Meaning they give different answers every time.
Yes. If you give a model the exact same natural language prompt 3 times, you might get 3 materially different implementations based on just slight variances in how it calculates the next token.
Which is terrifying.
It is. You cannot build a reliable pipeline on that level of variance. So YAML front matter provides strict, machine-readable metadata. It gives the document an explicit identity, a human owner, a version number, and traceable links to dependencies.
So it's basically acting as the master blueprint from our construction crew analogy earlier.
That's it, exactly.
It's the central source of truth that physically prevents the tools from doing the wrong thing.
It acts as a rigid system prompt framework. Before the LLM generates a single token of React code, it is forced to ingest those YAML constraints.
Oh, wow.
And more importantly, when the AI generates an output, the pipeline can programmatically check if the generated code still satisfies the explicit interfaces defined in the YAML.
Before a human ever even looks at it.
Exactly. The context spine turns a standard prose document into an auditable control point.
Because if the AI deviates from the intent, it's instantly obvious. It violates the machine-readable parameters.
Precisely.
Okay, but this brings up a huge point. If the YAML constraints are keeping the AI on track, and the AI is doing the actual implementation and writing the code.
Yeah.
What does this all mean for us? What exactly is a human supposed to do?
It's a shift, for sure.
Are humans just going to become professional YAML editors?
No, not at all. The framework actually strips away the repetitive typing and elevates the work that only humans can do.
Like what?
Well, humans must own the problem framing. An AI cannot decide if a technical requirement actually reflects the correct business trade-off, you know?
Right. It doesn't understand the business nuance.
Humans must also own the boundary decisions. Like, where is architectural flexibility acceptable and where is the risk profile just way too high?
That makes sense.
But most crucially, humans manage the transition approvals between the layers of the intent stack.
So the whole review process completely changes. We aren't doing like line-by-line syntax reviews anymore.
No, because the AI rarely makes a missing semicolon type of mistake anymore.
Right.
The most important reviews are transition approvals. Does the generated design still fit the original requirement? Mm-hmm. Does the generated implementation still respect the non-goals?
You're checking the intent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it comes down to accountability. An AI model cannot go to jail for a compliance failure.
Very true.
An AI cannot take the blame if a customer's data is exposed or if the platform's resilience degrades to the point of a massive outage. You, the human being, own that risk.
And that shift in accountability, I mean, that requires a massive shift in how teams measure success. If you are an engineering manager and you're tracking velocity or lines of code right now, your metrics are actively deceiving you.
Totally. You are rewarding the golden retriever for digging up the petunias as fast as possible.
Yes. So how do we fix that? Stop looking at velocity. What should we look at?
Carpenter introduces a much more accurate metric for this agentic SDLC. He calls it spec-to-code alignment.
Spec-to-code alignment. Okay.
Yeah.
How does a team actually measure that in practice?
You track the percentage of generated code that requires structural rework after the human transition review.
Structural rework.
Yeah. We are not talking about minor formatting tweaks or style cleanup. We are talking about necessary changes to the core logic the API interfaces, or the data models because the AI just completely misunderstood the assignment.
Got it. So if that rework percentage is really high, your pipeline is incredibly noisy.
Very noisy.
You aren't moving fast. You are just generating garbage at light speed and forcing your senior engineers to spend all their time untangling it.
Exactly. A high SPECTICODE alignment failure rate tells you that your upstream intent, your context spine, is simply too vague for the downstream AI to be useful.
Oh, wow. It forces the organization to look in the mirror.
It really does. If the AI is constantly building the wrong thing, the problem isn't the AI.
It's the humans.
The problem is how poorly the humans are articulating the problem statement.
Okay, the theory makes perfect sense. But let's look at the friction of reality for a second.
Some part.
Right. If I am an engineering director, and I walk into the office on Monday morning, and I tell my product managers that they can't use their shiny new Jira AI features, and I tell my designers Figma is no longer allowed to generate code, I'm going to start a political turf war instantly.
Oh, immediately.
So how does a listener actually implement this agentic SDLC without causing a mutiny?
Well, Carpenter is very direct about this warning. This is messy organizational change. It touches human identity, daily habits, and departmental territory.
People get very attached to their tools.
They do. So his core warning is to avoid boiling the ocean. Do not attempt a massive top-down reorganization of every workflow all at once.
Okay, so what's the mantra here?
The mantra for implementation is spec before speed.
Spec before speed. I like that. It's about building organizational guardrails. So what is the very first practical step?
Pick one contained product path. Do not start with your most politically charged, complex legacy initiative.
Start small.
Pick a representative new feature with clear customer value and a manageable cross-functional team. Run the intent stack experiment there in a sandbox so the team can feel the friction and adapt without risking a core product line.
That makes a lot of sense. But once you have the sandbox, you still have to address the tool sprawl, right?
Yes, you have to declare canonical tools for each layer.
Because you are never going to stop Jira and Figma from adding more AI features.
Exactly. The battle is explicitly deciding which tool is authoritative at which layer.
So if Figma is declared the canonical tool for the design layer,
then any UI suggestion generated by Jira's AI during the requirements phase is strictly advisory.
Meaning it carries no weight.
None. The engineering team can safely ignore it, but you have to write those decisions down, publish them to the team, and ruthlessly enforce them.
That is going to require a lot of political capital.
Yeah.
Telling a PM that their Jira AI output is meaningless to engineering is going to cause friction.
It will, but it is the only way to stop those 4 p.m. Friday collisions.
True.
And that leads directly into the next requirement. Every layer of the intent stack must output consumable artifacts.
Consumable artifacts. What does that mean in this context?
The output needs to be something the next layer can ingest programmatically without guessing. That means structured formats like JSON, open API schemas, markdown documents, or heavily annotated design files.
So hand-wavy prose in a Slack thread no longer counts as a specification.
Definitely not.
We are essentially presiding over the death of tribal knowledge.
Right.
You can't just rely on the fact that, you know, Dave in backend knows how the routing works anymore.
Right, because if it isn't in the consumable artifact, the AI doesn't know it exists.
Wow.
And the final guardrail is concentrating human attention exactly where it matters. You put human review checkpoints only at the layer transitions.
Only at the transition.
Yeah, you let the AI handle the repetitive mechanical checks in between, the unit tests, the security scanning, the dependency analysis.
Because human attention is an expensive, finite resource.
Exactly. You must concentrate it at the precise moments where intent can drift and business meaning can be lost, like the handoff from requirement to design and from design to implementation.
You review the translation of intent, but you stop micromanaging the syntax in the middle. So to kind of recap this whole journey, we started by looking at the absolute chaos of overlapping AI tools generating conflicting code. And through Carpenter's framework, we can see the path out of that chaos requires building an auditable, intentional pipeline driven by a structured context spine.
That's a perfect summary. The overarching reality of the next 5 years is that the organizations that win the market are not going to be the ones who bought the most AI vendor licenses.
Right.
They will be the ones that built the most coherent, disciplined pipelines. The actual writing of software is no longer the hard part.
The bottleneck has moved entirely to how well we govern intent.
Exactly. Learning is the hard part now.
Shipping code is easy now. Learning what to build, capturing that intent, and maintaining a system that human beings can still comprehend, that is the actual challenge.
It really is.
We spent this whole deep dive talking about creating the perfect structured context spine to carefully constrain and guide the AI. We need human intent translated into these perfect machine-readable YAML files.
Right.
But here's something to think about on your own. If we get really, really good at standardizing human intent into these perfectly machine-readable constraints, how long until we just train an AI model to write the context spine itself?
Oh, that's a wild thought.
And if the AI starts defining the foundational intent and the non-goals, what happens to the human bottleneck then? Something to mull over the next time you're staring at a failed integration on a Friday afternoon. Thank you for joining us, and keep questioning the tools you use every day.